Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. Hope you guys are doing well. We're going to do what we've done in the past and air another episode of Metal Wraps here for today's episode of Talking Metal. Metal Wraps, of course, is the episode or the podcast I do with Mitch Joel and Mitch LaFon. You can subscribe to it separately on iTunes, or you can just listen to it here on Talking Metal. That's what we're going to do today. So here we go. The most recent episode recorded last weekend of Metal Wraps with Mitch Joel, Mark Striegel, that's me, and Mitch LaFon of the One-on-One with Mitch LaFon podcast. Here we go.
Well, hey there, and welcome to episode number 22 of Metal Wraps. My name is Mitch Joel, and as always, we are joined by Talking Metal's Mark Striegel. Mark, how's it going?
Good, Mitch. Good to talk to you guys again.
You as well. And of course, One-on-One with Mitch LaFon's Mitch LaFon.
Yes, the other Mitch in this relationship.
I think day. I'm the other Mitch. You can be the, you'll be like the alpha Mitch.
Right. I'll be the Mitch and you'll be the A Mitch.
Yeah, I'll be the bitchy Mitch is what, who I'll be. Well, it's great.
Great reunion.
Listen, Mark, if you talk to me like a Mitch, I'm going to slap you like a Mitch. That's my favorite line.
You should be Mitch Striegel, quite frankly. That would be good.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to change my name because I like Mark better. It's, you know, so convenient. Yeah. Hey, guys. So let's start off. Let's go from tragedy into the nicer stuff. But clearly, I think all of us were pretty shaken up the other week when we heard about the insanity that happened in Bucharest. There was a club gig, a band called Goodbye to Gravity. 45 people dead, including I think the drummer was named today or the other day. Yep. Over 180 plus people injured, and there's a lot of sort of political news and stuff going on there. And obviously never going to make light of something like that. One is people go to shows like this to have a great time, love the music, hate the music, don't know the band. Irregardless, everybody should get home safe. And this is one of those crazy tragedies here in North America. I think the one that sort of sprung to mind as soon as I saw the news was definitely the terrible tragedy that happened with Great White many, many years ago.
At the station?
I always struggle with this. Like, I get that bands want to put on a great show, but pyro in a club just doesn't sound like a healthy combination to me. Mitch LaFon.
Well, I fully agree. There's no need for it. I think when you get to an arena stage and you've got somebody sitting way up in the rafters, you need pyro and you need a show to bring them into the show, you know, to make them feel part of the show. But in a club, you're there to impress them with the music. And I think, yeah, you can put on a show, but you have to stay within these limits of the songs, the band, the personalities, and keep the pyro for when you hit the Olympic Stadium. I mean, it's silly. And when you look at the station fire with Great White, that wasn't local news. That was on CNN and on, you know, whatever, Fox or whatever. People in Bucharest heard about it. People in France heard of it. We heard about it. We as fans, we should have said, yeah, we don't need this anymore. Just play for us. We're good. You know?
But people don't know. If it's not like you go to a show and you know before that there's pyro.
Sure,
and
the
also, the other part of it is, you know, in my brain at least, I think to, you know, Kiss using pyro in very early days, and I don't, you know, were they clubs? I don't know. There were hotel lobbies. It wasn't like an arena. You know, Motley Crue, I mean, you know, known forever. And, you know, Nicky lighting himself on fire and crazy pyro and just the ridiculous stories you heard from the 80s in those clubs. And it was definitely not any safer. And again, I'm not sort of switching sides and thinking it should be done. I'm actually not a fan of pyro in general, but I just think that there's a sort of thing with pyro and metal that I think it's not easy to just say save it for the arenas. I don't know, Mark, what do you think?
Well, I think we've progressed a lot as a society and a species since the 70s and 80s. And the pyro that bands like AC/DC are using nowadays is not the same pyro that they used back in the 80s. Those cannons that come out are no longer filled with actual gunpowder. The Kiss's show, everything is scientifically tested and rehearsed, and there's less chance for error with those shows nowadays. And there's just with what has happened in the clubs, there's just absolutely no excuse. What happened in that Great White Fire in the club back in Rhode Island? There's absolutely no excuse for this, and it's just awful and shocking that it would actually still be going on, that somebody who would be stupid enough to try to pull off a pyro show in a club. Yeah.
And it's not even like, you know, Great White wasn't close enough. I mean, Mitch and I here in Montreal, we had the crazy Guns N' Roses riot show where yep. people sometimes forget, but James Hetfield from Metallica was severely burned by pyro earlier on in that evening. Wasn't it that evening, Mitch, that it happened?
Yeah, it was absolutely that evening, and that was part of the reason why there were riots.
That was part of the pushing towards the and when I think to how much pyro Metallica uses now, and I'm always watching how close James Hetfield is to the pyro, I think what you said, Mark, is really important, that it's a different type of pyro now. It's much more controllable. They have, you know, even if you've seen clips from the newer Motley Crue shows or Kiss shows, you're right. The sort of ability for them to even control it, like it almost flicks like a lighter on and off, which, you know, I'm guessing has to do. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Right. It's not gunpowder. I mean, it's actual propane that they switch on and off, but. I don't know. I think that both the venue owners who see a club set up, because there's, obviously they open the door and let the band set up in the afternoon, they should say, hey, what are you doing here? Don't set that up. And the bands themselves should know. I mean, you know, wear lipstick like poison if you want to impress. Don't light the club
and
on fire.
And, you know, I love the pyro. I love seeing it
in an arena.
With Kiss and AC/DC and Iron Maiden in an arena. I love feeling the when I'm up close, feeling the heat on my face of the, you know, coming off the stage. It's an exciting thing. However, in a club, it's a different story. If you start lighting off pyro in a club, I think I'm actually going to be leaving as soon as that starts. You know, I'm not going to be impressed by that in a club. I'm going to be uncomfortable.
And I'm not making light of it, but to me, it's not even the pyro. It's the fact that the pyros are on a lot of flammable things in clubs like that, right? I mean, that's the big issue.
Right.
Speaking of a lot of the bands that we were mentioning, Mark, last night, as of this recording, you saw the new pre-show.
Yeah, I did see Priest. And it's interesting, I'm thinking back now to last night. I don't think there was any pyro. I don't think they had any flames or explosions on stage. Now, I don't know if that was a cost-effective thing.
You don't need flames when you're Rob Halford. You just need your voice. You don't have to hide behind a wall of flames like some bands.
Well, speaking of voice, how's he holding up?
Yeah, I will tell you, I had Rob Dukes here in my house. He was at the show last night. He's an amazing vocalist, sang with Exodus for over 10 years. He and I were talking over lunch today that Halford's voice, at least last night, I don't know, you know, if it was just a good night, it was insanely, insanely good for a guy pushing 70 years old. You know, and they... played Victim of Changes early in the set, and I was like, oh, I bet you they're doing this early because it's a tough song vocally. But no, he came back. Like, Painkiller was one of the, was the second to last show song of the evening. Screaming for Vengeance was late in the set. And he was, I was right up front there, and he was just hitting it and going for every single note. Absolutely no backing tracks here, I'll tell you that. And he was on fire. He comes out with a cane wobbling, you know, to the front of the stage, and then 10 minutes later he's like strutting around the stage and just wailing and hitting these notes. It was very, I don't know if you remember that scene in Willy Wonka where the guy comes out with a cane and then suddenly does a somersault, and it was very much like that, you know, like when he came out with the cane I was like, oh no, here we go. And then again within minutes he was just sprung to life, and his voice so intense. And it's also, you know, I could go on about this for hours, but it's also interesting, I will quickly say, how his stage presence has definitely evolved. I mean, this is a band I've seen since the 80s, and you know, he has this more kind of tough guy macho strut around the stage than he used to. That was interesting to me. And on a final note, the ticket sales, I know we were talking about Judas Priest ticket sales earlier this year, it was about a 20,000 seat arena. I was told when I got there by the security, they sold 4,500 in advance. However, being inside, now they had the top curtained off, but being inside, it felt like a lot more than 4,500 to me personally. I, if you would have told me 6,000 or 7,000, I would say, oh, that sounds more like it. But yeah, I was told by the security it was 45 advance tickets sold. So I don't know if like an extra 2,000 showed up and bought tickets at the door. It sounds like a lot to me, but you never know.
And who's opening?
Mastodon, who are also
great. Yeah, they're
very
amazing.
Very good. Very good. Excellent.
Great band. Yeah, this is one of the interesting moments, because I'd say I had more of a negative experience the last time I had seen Priest, which was on the last tour with Steel Panther. I felt like energy wasn't there. I wasn't sure about the vocals. And then, yeah, you know, just trolling through YouTube, came across a version of Painkiller that was done obviously on the past little recent while. And I was really surprised. And I was surprised because I had posted on Facebook a video of Motley Crue from either this year or last year from Rock in Rio. And just listening to that in comparison, you could not compare it. I mean, you know, Vince was, to say Vince struggles, it would have been an understatement here. And again, nothing to slight this band that I grew up with and I love, and they were my everything for a long, long time. But, you know, Vince is being Vince now with this stuff. He's singing every third or fourth word, maybe. I keep joking, like, he doesn't need a teleprompter, because I don't even think he's speaking English. He's just sort of like throwing his voice in where words should be. And it doesn't matter if the word's right or wrong, because it's not even in English. And look, there were a lot of comments where people were like, what was that? What language was that in? Was that, you know, was that some foreign language? We don't know. And it's amazing to me to think about, you know, one, the comparison between bands, not that you can compare the music, but just the sort of comparison of what older brands are doing live. But more importantly, these guys know it's going to be on YouTube, right?
Yeah, it is interesting with Vince too, because a number of years ago, I see Motley Crue every single time they come through town almost. And a number of years ago, like I'm talking like 5 years ago, he was really, really good when I saw them and seemed to really be on the money. But the last time I saw them, he definitely was a little sloppy and pitch issues. And the same thing with Van Halen. You know, when they first came back, like in 2007, I guess that was 2008, Roth was on every night. And then, you know, that last tour they did, there a lot of I didn't actually go see it, but the videos I saw on YouTube, some real questionable performances from Roth. So yeah.
So, and also, you know, once we're on the topic of Motley Crue, you know, Tommy Lee had this wrist issue, tendonitis. There were some other rumors jetting around. Missed a whole bunch of shows. Was replaced with Alice Cooper's drummer,
right? Glenn Sobel, good guy.
Glenn Sobel, great drummer.
And I saw one of those shows, by the way.
Yeah, and you know, Tommy seemed to be posting stuff up on Facebook and Instagram about what was going on. Seemed very apologetic. Was at the shows. It's not like he was off in Malibu or something. And he was still doing stuff, DJing, playing Home Sweet Home. Not sure what. Mitch, you had brought up this idea that, you know, because it's the last show,
right?
It's sort of maybe for those, I don't know, last four or tour. Five shows, yeah, that like maybe they should make them back up to those people. Well, what do you think? Because I have my own thoughts, but Mitch, what do you think?
Well, you know, listen, if the injury had gone on for months, then I say finish the tour and so be it. But because it was just four, it's really not that hard to reschedule. And listen, I saw the show in Quebec City. I think Glenn did a wonderful job. In fact, I saw three Motley shows, and it was my favorite, mostly because I didn't actually have to sit through a drum solo, which is true. They probably should have been more upfront, because in Quebec City, the day of the show, on the radio, they were doing interviews saying, Tommy's there, Tommy's there, Tommy's there, he'll be there, he'll be there, he'll be there. I guess try to keep sales going. And the minute you walk into the venue, there was a poster that said, sorry, Tommy's not playing. And it seemed sort of disingenuous. And if you were going to go through that trouble, you should have just said, hey, you know what? Yeah, we said we're going to finish in L.A., but let's give these people what they paid for. Which is a farewell tour. And by the way, in Quebec, not a lot of people paid for it. And there was about 6,000 people in a 20,000 seater. When you look out from the stage, you know, the sides were filled, but the back of the venue and the tops were blacked out. And
but isn't that a great reason not to do it again? Like, it wasn't like there was such a high demand and people were in my brain, I'm thinking, I don't know. I think it would be a hard thing to redo because there's a cost and expense to this. And my understanding, and nothing against this band, I love Motley Crue, that this has been a hard tour in terms of, you know, getting bums in seats. But again, one of the top grossing tours of last year, apparently, as well. So yeah, who knows?
I think there is tour insurance, though. I mean, let's not forget there is tour insurance. There is no tour on the road without tour insurance, which is exactly for these moments where you have to cancel because of injury, sickness, whatever else. So yeah, there's a cost, but it would have been covered.
Yeah, I think, you know, I saw them over a year ago at the Garden in New York City and got all choked up when they did Home Sweet Home, thinking, wow, this is the last time they'll be playing in New York, in this area, you know, goodbye Motley Crue. And this is October 2014. And here we are a year later, and this is still going on. They've come back through New York, New York, New Jersey area numerous times since then. This was really the fun.
We knew this was coming though, Mark.
Yeah,
right?
I don't feel sorry for them one bit if they're having trouble getting people in the seats, because they've far extended their they pushed their luck with this thing, and it should have been a final tour, and boom, they're out, they're done. This is the final tour, and it's going to last 3 years. Give me a break.
Ozzy did his No More Tours tour in '92, and he's still out there. So, you know.
Well, he lied. I actually do think Motley Crue are gonna stick to this and not tour anymore after this. But
they'll still be a band. They'll do the corporate gigs. They'll do the, you know, Super Bowl halftime or.
Yeah, even the Sabbath thing that, you know, a lot of my friends were like, oh my God, this is the last time they're going to play New York. Are you buying tickets for the Garden? And I didn't buy them. And thankfully I didn't, because they're playing in a place in Jersey, which has a much better sound. And of course they announced that, you know, after the Garden was sold out, and, you know, it's like 4 months later, but the Crew thing is ridiculous. I mean, a final tour that's like 2 to 3 years long. It just seems crazy to me.
When I hear the story again, I'm trying to be somewhat empathetic to these guys, and it's one of those things where it's like you want to end it, or you not want to end it as one side, but the other side is, it's like, well, there are about 80 more venues in the New York area that we could sort of keep coming back to, and I get, you know, look, they're making one last run at this, like we had said. Well, there has been conversations about them struggling to get bums in seats. My understanding is that this is a fairly high grossing tour nonetheless, and doing well for them, and sure. You know, I mean, it's all fine, fun and dandy, and people go, well, they've got their millions upon millions of dollars, but who knows what their nuts are like, right?
Well, I guess some people do. Mean, it's like, you know, when they first announced this and they first went out, from what I understand, every show was sold out or near capacity, and now you're seeing very few shows sold out, and some where they're really struggling to
But keep one thing in mind, the early part of the tour was a lot of B markets. They were in Iowa, they were in, you know, these smaller little places where it was easy to get sold out because nothing comes to town. When they got to the larger markets, the LAs, the Montreals, all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, there's missing a few people now.
That said, I love how Mitch thinks Montreal's a large market.
Well, you know,
we're third tier, buddy.
No, I understand that. But when you play the Bell Center, you're still playing to 15,000. When you go play Iowa or Dubuque or whatever, you're playing in a 7,000 venue. So when you say it's sold out, you go, yeah, well, yeah, okay, it's sold out, but it's a 7,000 venue. It's not, you know, 20,000. You know, Quebec is certainly a C market, and it was one third full.
Right. Well,
so we're undecided as to whether or not they should have either canceled the dates with Tommy Lee, or at least tried to go back and do it with the man. I guess they should have done something special.
They should have maybe added three songs or just something to say, hey, look, Tommy's not here. You're not getting exactly what you came for. Let's throw in a couple of bonus songs so that you leave here feeling great.
I hear you. That's fair.
They're not delivering what they promised. This was sold as the original four members. You know, I would be really disappointed myself. So,
it's rough to show up at the venue.
It's a business, and I'm sure, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars get lost if they can't cancel a show. You know, so.
All right, so before we take off and talk about what we've been checking out lately, Black Sabbath, right? They've got a farewell tour coming out.
Yes,
pictures are out. There's no picture of Bill Ward. There's no mention of a drummer. Right. We know there's been some public discourse in terms of how Bill Ward has been battling it out with Ozzy and the guys. What do you think? Is it fair for Black Sabbath to do a farewell tour without Bill Ward? And again, let's keep in mind that this is somebody who is quote-unquote healthy as far as we know. He is playing. He does want to play, and he is capable and has done it. This isn't like we're dragging somebody out of the coffin.
Right.
So can Black Sabbath go on the road ethically and do a farewell tour without Bill Ward?
No. I mean, they can do it. But if it's just about dollars and cents, it's like, look, it's the last kick of the can. Bill helped you get to where you are. Just give him 1/4. I mean, let's not deny the whole legacy and end on this sour note over, you know, a few thousand dollars. I mean, you know, Tony, Ozzy, Geezer, they're not starving. It's not like they need the extra 10%. I mean, come on, let's not be disingenuous with the fans. Bring back Bill.
But what if it's not just about the money? What if they feel
that he
just doesn't have it? It just the vibe isn't there. He's getting older. The show is not that good. It's easy to say money. And again, I will be the last person to not want to see Bill in a final Sabbath environment. Mark?
Yeah, I don't know if you heard Bill's record that he put out this year, Accountable Beats. I bought it because it wasn't available on Spotify. And his drumming has gotten to a point where it is so awful. This guy has no business being on stage. He was struggling when he was in the band, you know, back when I saw them in 1999 through whatever that lasted, 2003 or whatever, 2004. It was a struggle for him then. From what I understand, listening to Ozzy's arguments, he's done very little playing on the drums since then. And if you hear Accountable Beats, it's just a mess of a record, and the drums definitely not good. He doesn't even play drums on the whole record, if I am remembering correctly.
Well, I'll add this caveat then. If he's going to come back, then he's got to do the work. Get into a gym, get in tip-top shape, get into the rehearsal studio. I mean, don't just show up fat and lazy.
Can you risk it? You know, Mitch, I mean, it's easy to say, but that's risk, right? We've seen this happen with Kiss. We've seen this happen in other instances, and it can be really, really risky, especially with that much money on the line. It's Black Sabbath. It is going to be a big deal, I think, especially if they say it's their farewell. And You know, it's funny. When I heard the story about money, I sort of thought, I don't know. Like, I think Tony, Ozzy, and Geezer are all in varying degrees of wealth post-Black Sabbath, some way more than others. And if there was ever a way to have somebody not be a part of that tour in terms of not wanting to offend or insult the legacy, the easiest thing to do is to say it's about the money.
Yeah. Now, if you remember when they first got together back, I believe it was 98 or 97, I saw Sabbath. It was Ozzy, Iommi, Geezer, and Mike Borden
great show.
Faith No More. And people always blame Ozzy. Oh, well, Ozzy and Sharon didn't want him back at that time. No, what happened was, from the way I understand it, is Bill had actually had rejoined Sabbath, what was Sabbath, before that reunion, and had done a South American tour with Tony and Tony Martin. Iommi was the one who was like, wow, he really wasn't playing that well. And let's use your guy, Ozzy, Mike Borden. So they did that. And then I guess in the meantime, Bill really tried to get his chops back, although that's arguable. If you saw the shows, the reunion shows that he did, he was definitely sluggish. I just think they shouldn't use him. I think they're going to be a much stronger band with Tommy Clufetis on drums, which will most likely be the guy they use again. Right. I think the big news is that, you know, when they announced this final tour, it was a final album and a final tour. And now Ozzy has said that they've scrapped the record and it's just going to be a final tour. So I'm wondering why that happened. I'm not sure. But
where is that
final album scrapped? Yeah. And I do think there could actually be a couple songs laying around left over from the last album I don't know.
That's crazy. So before we take off, what are you guys listening to? Let's start with you, Mitch.
Yes. So I am listening to a great box set by the Backyard Babies called Them XX. It is four discs, and it's a greatest hits plus two discs of all these rarities that they've done, and a DVD. And of course, I've also got the new Def Leppard, as it's called, going. I'm going sort of Swedish old school with Backyard Babies these days.
Nice. Mark?
Cool. Yeah. I think a record Mitch may have mentioned before. I'm not sure. Testosterone by Mustache.
Yes,
great
sir.
Record. Yeah.
Ain't that fun? It's a fun record.
Yeah.
Sweden
great
rocks,
stuff.
Man.
It really does.
I've got to move over there. And I'm going to interview Mustache in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Good. They do very few interviews, so at least over here. So I look forward to hearing that. Chelsea Wolf, which is kind of like this drone metal alternative band, very weird stuff. Chelsea Wolf is a woman, and she does some real interesting stuff. It's not for everybody. It's again kind of sludgy, droney, almost some Radiohead influence at times. So it's definitely not for everyone. The new Def Leppard, absolutely. What else? I guess that's it off the top of my head. There's an interesting band from Jersey, New York State called Cruel Seasons, who I want to give a shout out to too. They just released their first self-titled record, or actually it's not self-titled. It's called Rise, and it's definitely a good listen.
I've got two, and I'm glad neither of you mentioned them. One is the new Coheed and Cambria, Color Before the Sun.
Cool.
Awesome album. Awesome album. These guys sound amazing. There's some super crazy, weird, poppy stuff in there that's still extremely heavy that just works amazingly well. And an album I cannot get enough of, and I'm going to keep talking about. And everybody who asks me what I'm listening to, I talk about this album, the new Queensryche album, Condition Human. I can't think of a band from the 80s era that has recorded something new, and I mean new like in the recent years, that I've loved this much. And while I love the new singer, I really wish this would have been done with Jeff Tate and All Could Have Been Forgotten, but it probably took not having him in the group to make this album. But if you have not heard Queensryche Condition Human and you have any sort of inclination towards the band Queensryche or anything sort of progressive metal-y, just drop everything. I think it's just a stunner to me. I don't know if you guys are as crazy about it as I am, but I love that album.
Yes.
Yeah, in fact, definitely.
I'm going to probably annoy you with this. I have the Japanese version that has a bonus track on it called Espiritu Muerto. Wow. There you go. And it's actually, I don't want to say it's the best song on the album, but it's a bloody great track. It's like, why do they keep doing these throwaway bonus tracks?
Wow.
It's a great track.
And they've been floating through live. Like, they were here with Scorps, and I didn't go see them, and I've been sort of hemming and hawing, and now I'm just, like, chomping at the bit to go see these guys live, because...
I think they're coming, at least down here, they're coming back around in January, I think, doing a solo gig. So, yeah, but that's
cool
a great record.
How cool would they be at Heavy Montreal? Come on, Mitch, you make a call.
I'll tell you a story off the air, but yeah, okay, we'll talk about that. So
one other one. Andrew Watt, who was the guitar player in California Breed with Glenn Hughes and Jason Bonham, has a solo EP out produced with some of the Queens of the Stone Age guys. The drummer Joey, ex-drummer of Queens of the Stone Age, and one of the Queens of the Stone Age songwriters, producer guys, is producing this record. Chad Smith from the Chili Peppers is on it too. It's absolutely great. It's an EP. It's called Ghost in My Head. The kids should be listening to it. It's like power pop with heavy guitar rock. Very young sounding. This guy's a young guy in his early 20s, and I wish kids were listening to this, because it's you know, got the Katy Perry sensibility, but it's rock, and it's good rock, you know. So it's definitely something to check out. Andrew Watt, Ghost in My Head.
Nice. Well, awesome as always chatting with you guys. We'll be back real soon with episode number 23 of Metal Raps. My name is Mitch Joel. You can always find me at Mitch Joel on Twitter. Or check out my podcast, which is all about me having conversations with bass players, but it's not really about bass playing, at notreble.com/groove, because it's called Groove, the No Treble Podcast. Mark, where can people find you?
Yeah, talkingmetal.com, or I'm on Facebook, facebook.com, mstrigl, M-S-T-R-I-G-L. Friend me there.
Mitch LaFon?
On Twitter at Mitch LaFon, and also on Spreaker, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, all that. Look up the One-on-One with Mitch LaFon podcast, where I interview rock stars. I've got Steve Vai coming up, Tom Werman,
nice,
and a bunch of others. And the Tom Werman one is great, because I asked him what he thought of Nikki Sixx, and oofa. And then I asked him what he thought of Dee Snider, and it's like, oh, okay, maybe I can't print that, but I will. So... tune in.
Good teasing. Nice. Speak to you guys soon.
Cheers.
Bye.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.